Hey, you're listening to the Eastside Remedy podcast by Phoebe and Emanuelo.
Hello, Tiffany.
Hi.
Thank you for coming here today.
Of course.
So it's very different today because obviously you're not my brother.
Oh, no, another girl.
And you're not my sister. And sometimes I wonder what it's like to have a sister, but I'll never know.
Oh, it's okay. I'll basically be it.
But I have Tiffany here with me today because my brother's busy, so he can't record with me, unfortunately, which is okay. I need a replacement.
Oh, yeah.
I need to replace him soon, I think.
Yeah. The time difference is enough.
And I think Tiffany is a great candidate because Tiffany, she's like me, she's Asian too. Which is the whole point of this podcast. Mm-hmm. And also she's a teacher. But I'm not going to take away your introduction. I'll just have you introduce yourself.
Sure.
A little bit. So take it away.
Alrighty. So my name is Tiffany. I am a teacher. This is my fourth year of teaching middle school math. And I have been born and raised right here in Texas, so Asian American and a Texan all rolled into one.
There are a lot of Asians here, actually.
Oh, yeah, but not a lot of them are born and raised
here. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Is it, like, mainly in, like, California or something?
Maybe? I don't know. Sometimes I think, like, that's what my fiancé is. He's, like, born in California but raised in Texas.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. So how I know Tiffany was actually from church. So very grateful that she's here today, with me. She didn't have to do it, but I bribe her with boba and kimbap. So, but I'm always curious because, obviously I wasn't born here and I grew up like 18 years in Malaysia. And so, it's such a different experience for me. When I first came here, I went straight to college in Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. I spent like 6.5 years there. And it's a very different environment there, I would say, compared to Texas.
Yeah.
Maybe Texas is a little bit more diverse. Mm-hmm. But I just learned so much about the American culture until I came here. And then I'm like, wait, there are so many little, almost like subdivision of American culture. Because it's not just, like, white people, right? In America, there are so many other races, which I don't think a lot of, like, Asians in Asia is aware of that.
No.
Most of the time people think about America, they think about, like maybe in Gossip Girl, you know? Like
burgers, pizza.
Yeah, like New York and all that. And so I always wonder, what is it like for you to grow up in America? If you can kind of explain your experience a little bit.
Sure. So technically first gen, but I don't really consider myself first gen American just because my parents moved here when they were in fifth grade.
Oh.
So, like, they've been here ever since they were really young. And so for us growing up, like, we didn't really feel ousted by it. So me, my brother, and my sister are, like, we're one and a half kind of generation because they already paved the way and they already knew American culture. My fiance will tell you, like, my dad has a better American accent than I do because he works from home and he's working in, like, technical support and, like, he has to, like, be very, very clear when speaking.
Mm-hmm.
And so his American accent is probably better than all of ours together.
Wow.
My mom definitely has an accent, but she works in insurance, so I think it's okay.
Yeah.
Like, oh, cool, a foreigner's taking care of my insurance.
Oh my,
what else is new?
Yeah.
So she doesn't really fix it. And then my brother and sister are, like, basically American, and so we were I was the kind of weird middle of, like, do we teach our child Korean, do we just teach her English, do we put her in ESL, do we not put her in ESL, which is, like, that second language? And they're like, no, we don't want ESL because then she has to test out of it and, you know, all these things. And so I didn't really grow up speaking formal Korean. Like, I just grew up, like, speaking English.
Oh,
that was all we spoke at home, and that's all we did at home. And sometimes my parents are better about it now. They'll sprinkle in Korean when they're at home.
Okay.
But no, I'm not very fluent in Korean. Like, I'm like a first or second grader. Korea kind of thing. And so that was kind of my experience growing up. I never really noticed a difference, but maybe that was just the way that they had raised me. And we were always in very inclusive communities. Like the church that I was at before was a Korean American church. And so I would go on Sunday and like everyone looked like me. And it was never a question of like, oh yeah, I was dealing with this at school and I did this at school. And my white friends did this. My black friends did this. My Mexican friends did this. And it was a normal conversation between everyone.
So was it a was the church in Korean or was it in English?
So we had two services. So one was the Korean ministry and one was the English ministry. And then we have a youth, but the youth was mostly English.
Oh, okay. Okay. So you would say that even though Texas is pretty diverse, but you would say that it didn't feel like you're an outcast or anything like that in school?
I mean, we would get, like, super duper microaggressions of, like, oh, you're an Asian, you must be good at math, that kind of thing, right? But, like,
why math? Why is it
I
know,
but
math?
I was actually good at math, so that was probably the issue, is that, like, I was part of the microaggression of, like, oh, yeah, of course I'm good at math, but it was, like, no, I'm a math teacher now, so, like, I was legit good at math, but, like, some of my other Asian friends who weren't good at math would, like, complain about that microaggression, but I never felt it because I was actually good at it. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And that kind of reminds me of like the term model minority. Because that wasn't really something, like, it's not even a thing, I don't think, in Malaysia, like model minority. Even though Chinese people in Malaysia, we are the minority. So I wonder what that term means to you or if it means anything to you.
I mean, we heard it thrown around. Like, it was never something to be compared about. They would be like, oh, look at this Asian girl. She's excelling at math and this person isn't. Why is that? And it was like, oh, because she's Asian. Duh. She's a model minority. She works super duper hard about it. But I had never grown up to really take offense to it. It wasn't until like I processed it later as like an adult of like, oh, I was being compared to my peers and they were feeling bad about it later. And like, I didn't realize that. And I don't, it was super like implicit. It was super like, they didn't mean it to mean any harm.
Wow. So since we were talking about being a, well, you being a teacher, and tying that to like mental health and all that, and that kind of made me think of too, like COVID. I forgot to put that in the note, but when you think about all of that, like being a teacher, mental health, and COVID, like, well, what's that like for you?
Oh gosh, well, COVID was rough. COVID was super rough because we kept our all the districts across America were just changing of like, okay, we're gonna be fully remote. Oh no, wait, our kids need to be back in the school, but we can't really be back in the school. So let's do this weird hybrid model. But the hybrid model did not work at all. Like, it burned out our kids. It burned out our teachers. And like, we're seeing higher retirements and we're seeing more people just quit in general. Like it's a great resignation or whatever. And so like, we saw that, but like, we are seeing it in our students so, so much. Like, I teach seventh grade, but I feel like I'm teaching fifth graders. Like, that's their maturity level. Like, they haven't, some of them haven't been into a school for 2 years.
Wow.
They didn't finish their formal elementary.
Wow.
And they're just stepping into the middle of middle school. So, like, I feel like I'm teaching fifth graders of, like, don't hit each other. Or, like, I'll see a kid kick someone and I say, please don't kick them. And they're like, I didn't kick them. And I was like, oh, my God, I just saw you. What do you mean?
Yeah.
Don't lie to me either when I just saw you. But I think that's because at home, they're so used to like their parents saying, hey, don't do this. And they're like, I didn't do that. My brother did this or my sister did this or someone else did that. And so now they're bringing that into school of like, I didn't kick them. Someone else did. You must be mistaken.
Yeah.
It's like, I just saw you. Don't lie to me. And some, and we also see the other spectrum of like, some kids don't know how to do school. Like, there's a couple of people who will come in like 7 a.m. for tutorials or whatever, and they're already shaking. Because they're so stressed about what they have to do for the entire day. Of like, oh, I have to do this homework. I have to go here. I have to do lunch with this person and that person. And so they're so nervous that they're already broken down at 7 a.m. And it's like, oh my gosh, how do I help you not be like that?
So it sounds like socially, emotionally, there's a huge adjustment.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. So how does that affect, like, your mental health as a teacher overall?
I mean, it's frustrating because we're supposed... Sometimes we see the kids more than their own parents do, but it's a delicate line of, like, how much do I parent your kid? How much do I take the responsibility away from the parent kind of thing of, like, I don't want to be the kid's parent, right? Like, right. I'm too young for that. I don't even have a kid of my own.
You're like, I don't get paid enough for
No, I have a kid of my own. I don't know how to do this at all. Like, I won't take any parent responsibility away. Yeah. But some of my coworkers who are older, who have their own kids, are like, man, it's such a delicate balance of, like, I just want to have a conversation with this parent and tell them how they should be parenting their kid.
Yeah.
Because their home life is affecting their school life. And, like, we can have meetings all about it and we can make, you know, adjustments and accommodations for, like, extra time or reading it to them. But at the end of the day, if you're not doing something at home too, it's not going to make any effect in school.
Yeah,
like, the girl who's shaking at 7 in the morning, I could give her all the extra time in the world.
Yeah.
It's not going to do anything if they don't do something at home.
Yeah. It's kind of like basically in therapy too when I'm working with children. Because I work with children as young as like 7 all the way to, you know, like 18 and whatnot. But it's the same concept. Like, we can only do so much.
Yeah.
They only see me an hour a week.
Yeah.
If not an hour every other week. And I can teach them all the skills, but if they're not practicing with your parents, it's like, I have to reteach them every time they come back in here. Use your coping skills.
Uh-huh.
Remember what I said about breathing and all that stuff. So I totally feel you. I can't imagine. It's definitely a hard job. So kind of want to combine what we have said so far with being a teacher and a minority and mental health. How do you think they all, like, relate to each other?
It's so weird because I don't really feel the minority teacher-wise. There is another Asian teacher at my school, so I think that helps. But it also helps that most of my cohort is women. Like, there's not really a lot of men. There are some men in the hallway, and there are coaches, obviously, and, like, they're there for the authority figure if we ever need it. But we mostly bond on the idea of, like, oh, we're all women, and we all have different things going on in their lives, and, like, being able to support each other in that way. And so I never really feel that I'm singled out for being Asian necessarily. The mental health piece is hard in middle school because we're, like, constantly monitoring and, like, making sure, like, we have to call CPS every now and then. The high school across the street, like, they had a suicide commitment. Someone was in the bathroom and, like, things happened. And so, like, we're on very high alert, and we are on very much so, like, calling our counselors almost every day of, like, hey, can you go check on this kid? They just left my room super upset to the restroom. Like, I think they're upset about this concept they're not getting. Or, like, hey, I see that this person has really long, they've been wearing long sleeves every day. Like, I think they're, you know, hurting themselves in some way or scratching a lot in that way. And so we're definitely monitors of that for mental health, but as well as the teaching piece. And so always make, we, one of my coworkers, she uses Maslow's, like, to a T of, like, she will always make sure that the person and the student is taken care of first before we do any teaching. And, like, I'm trying to be better at about it.
It's hard because you only have so much time. Oh my gosh. So would you say as a teacher, you've been trained to do all those things as well?
I don't think I was trained in terms of college. I think, like, my college teaching education was not there. Like, it did not help me for that part of life of, like, constantly monitoring my students and checking with them. But I think student teaching helped a lot. And then actually being in the classroom and being told, I think in the first, like, week or so, they're like, here are the three presentations we get every year, suicide prevention, CPS calls, and this. And we get the same thing every year, so it's kind of repetitive and boring. But, like, it's super important for what we're doing of, like, no, we do see it and we do call parents about it and we do let them know. But it's that delicate line again of, like, some parents like don't believe in the mental health piece of like
that's true.
Of like my kids just need to get over it. They're 13, they're going through hormones. Like how much is it real? And I was like, I understand that, but I see them in, like every day.
I'm just thinking about all the clients I used to have. Exactly what you're saying. Parents who are not supportive of mental health, that's so hard.
Oh yeah.
That's so hard. Anything else that kind of come up for you when you think about mental health, being a minority or being a teacher?
I think it's hard to talk to parents when you're not a parent yourself. That's what I've learned a lot. like in this 4-year experience, like when I first call parents or when I first talk to parents, they're like, oh, you sound a lot younger than what I thought you were. And I was like, okay. And they're like, do you have your own kids? And I was like, no, but I usually relate it back to my sister because she's in 8th grade.
Okay.
And I was like, oh no, I have a sister in 8th grade. I know what they're going through and like relating in that way.
Yeah.
But parents definitely are looking for that connection piece of, can you relate back to me as a person?
Mm.
And so that's what I've noticed of like, if I can relate it back to my own experience or relate it back to my sister's experience, that usually helps. Cause like I had very mild depression junior and senior year.
Mm.
And so I'll tell them about that. I was like, I can notice these signs because I had them myself.
Mm.
And so I just want to make sure that it stays mild and it doesn't increase or anything like that.
That's good. What do you think is lacking in the education system in terms of like mental health?
I think, I don't know what the training is, but I think our counselors are very, very overwhelmed.
Mm.
Like, they take care of one whole grade level. So, like, 7th grade, the counselors are taking care of 300 kids.
Yeah.
Or checking in with them. Not all of them at the same time, but, like, some of our high needs ones, they're, like, checking in with every day, but still checking in with your other needs as well.
Yeah.
And so I think that's hard for them, as well as they have to look for very severe cases before they truly intervene.
Wow.
Because we can tell them, like, I think this kid is thinking about suicide, and we'll send them to them, and they'll ask super hard questions of, like, what are your steps for suicide? What are you thinking about? Why is this leading to it? And if they don't have formal steps of how they want to do so, then they don't intervene. They'll just step away and be like, okay, we'll call your parents and they'll take care of it. And so I don't think that's enough for our kids, because some of the parents don't believe it.
Right. Yeah, I always wonder how that works. Because there are probably only 2 counselors in probably each school, right? That's usually what I hear.
Yeah, like, we have 3, 1 for each grade level, 6, 7, 8.
Yeah, I mean, and most of the time, from my understanding, school counselors, they are more focused on administrative kind of stuff. Which I'm like, how do you even have time to see kids and do administrative stuff?
Right. I think they're overwhelmed. I truly do. I was like, how do you counsel someone and, you know, take care of our testing, you know, schedule and getting our materials and, you know, making us putting kids in classes and doing that distribution?
They probably don't have time, which I know a lot of school counselors, they would just refer students to counselors outside of school.
But it's so hard because parents don't take the referral.
Right. So, okay. So there's definitely a lack of, like, almost like manpower and resources, too, in a way. Like, why can't they hire people just to do administrative stuff? Maybe?
I don't know.
Anything else that that you want to just throw out there, like just being an Asian yourself and a teacher and anything mental health related?
I don't think so. I think definitely that Asian American perspective of it is different than, like, there's subcultures even in the Asian American community. Mm. Like, Beyonce has a completely different experience, right? Because I was, like, in the North Texas area, which is very privileged and has more resources than where he was in East Texas.
Where is that?
East Texas? Mesquite.
Oh, okay.
And so like the communities there are just different. Like my community was mostly, you know, white and Mexican, and then his community was mostly black and Mexican. And so he has a completely different experience and completely different mindset of things. Like academic wise, he was like, oh, I'm gonna work just enough to do this. But mine was more like, I gotta work to go get a scholarship and be successful and do all these other things so that I'm loan free and I can put in like money things into investments and things. He was like, I don't even know if I know what an investment is. And I was like, oh my God, what do you mean?
Actually, I thought of something else. So you briefly mentioned that when you were younger, you did experience depression. In terms of help, like mental health help, like how available was it back then? And also, how open were your parents to like getting you that help?
I don't think my parents were open to it, but it was so weird because, like, it was. I thought I had seen the sign at 16, and at that point, I was at a boarding school, so I wasn't really home. So it was hard for me to justify to my parents that I had it when I'm not at home with them. But I was at UNT, and so like they had mental health resources at college campuses. And so I would go, and they're like, yes, you have the mildest version of depression. Here are the exercises we want you to do at home. Check in with us at a, in a week. And doing that every week with them helped for the most part. Like I didn't need to go any further than that. But that's because I was able to self-identify pretty quickly because of the board. I thought it was a boarding school situation. I was like, I think I'm stressed out because I'm not at home anymore. And these are completely different people. And I don't know anyone. And so I was like, okay, if that's my stressor, I probably need to go ask someone for help. And so I was very self-aware at that time, but most girls are very self-aware. Like if a boy was put in that situation, I don't think he would have reacted the same way.
Not so much, probably. I guess it depends on their upbringing too, but yeah, I think for you to be able to be like, oh, yeah, I need help, like that takes so much courage to even do that. So I'm glad you did. I'm glad you did. So, would you say that I know obviously you're not representing the whole Asian American in the United States, but like would you say that in general, like you find like maybe your friends and family are more like resistant or open towards seeking help in general?
I think if you talk generation wise, I think once you get to like that millennial and Gen Z, they're very open about it. But once you get kind of towards like Gen X and boomers, I don't think they believe in it. Mostly because they're in a very immigrant mindset of like, I have to make this work. It doesn't matter how much pain I'm in, I have to make this work. And like that mindset shifts a lot once you get towards that millennial side of like, no, I'm gonna complain that I'm in pain and I'm gonna go get it done kind of thing. And I think my parents have definitely shifted a little bit more. Like they've seen the effects of like suicide and they've seen the effects of depression. And like once they see the effects themselves, they're like, oh no, it's probably a real thing. Just go take care of it. But they won't go and take care of it with you. They're very much so like, you go take care of it on your own.
Yeah, because I wonder, because I don't know in your culture if it's the same, but I know in the Chinese culture, it's all about saving the face, you know, for because it's like I represent my whole family. I'm not just me, which is a hard concept for a lot of my white friends to understand that. So I wonder if it's some of that too in our older generations. Like we gotta save face. Like yeah, we know there are issues in the family, but we're not going to tell everybody else what's going on in our family.
Yeah, that's definitely my mom.
Yeah.
Definitely mom. I think dad doesn't care as much about it. He's just like, just go take care of it so it doesn't become a bigger issue. And like we even noticed that in our teaching styles, because I was talking to the other Asian teacher, I think literally yesterday, and I was like, you know, we were doing a fire drill, something super easy and they've been doing for years, but our kids are so talkative. Like they don't know just to be quiet when we go outside and come back inside. And so I yelled at my kids. I was like, you're representing me. I don't care if someone else's class is acting a fool outside. Yeah. You come out quietly, come back in quietly.
Yeah.
Right? And the other Asian teacher was like, yeah, my kids are the same way. And I was like, but I don't feel like the science teachers or the English teachers are telling their kids the same thing. You know? And I just don't think they were taught that way or like brought up that way culturally of like, you represent more than just you.
Yeah. Yeah. Oof, yeah. And we can go down, like, a rabbit hole with that one, too.
Yeah, because it's huge.
Because even with, like, if you think about, like, family dynamic, like, in therapy-wise, like, working with families, like, that's hard. Hard. like, the individualism in America.
So big. You saw it in COVID, right? Like, the vaccine, that whole debate.
Yeah.
I'm like, this is my right. I was like, just do what's better for the better good. I was like, I don't understand.
Yeah, in Asia, it's more like, hey, let's work together to just fix this together and just get over this.
But America's like, no, individual rights. I'm not doing this. I was like, oh,
yeah.
Okay, I see.
Man, I feel like I need to invite you back again and just talk more about just that culture piece.
Oh, yeah, it's huge.
Just because... I don't know why. I don't think I have the right to speak for America, because maybe I wasn't born here, so it's hard for me to say, like, oh, yeah, like, America, this and that.
Yeah.
So, maybe, I don't know, maybe in the future, if you're open to it, I might invite you back again. But I want to wrap up with this one last question, because I know a lot of times, even though we know that there are counselors out there that we can go to. Maybe we have some just like hesitancy to reach out. So I guess I want to leave this last space and time for you to ask any questions that you have to a counselor. So
to a counselor? I don't know. I feel like family dynamics is what makes everything like go.
Yeah.
Like, that's the root of a lot of people's problems.
Yeah.
So, like, how do we help, you know, minorities and their family dynamics when it's so, like, culturally tied?
Mm-hmm.
Like, how do we make sure that it doesn't continue, right? Yeah. Like, we want to break these generational curses, and I think, like, Disney and their recent movies have really been trying to hit that, with the Encanto and the
Turning Red. Yeah.
Like, you could see, like, that generation and that family dynamic really start playing out. But, like, how do we actually do something about it for our next generations?
Yeah. I think one of the things, and this is across all cultures, I think, that I always try to do as a counselor when it comes to families, is that I try to help them to see their similarities and what they're trying to achieve as a family, and focus in on their values instead. Yeah. Just because as a family, if you don't know what you value, it's going to be hard to work together and find that connection with one another.
Yeah.
So let's say if a family's value is love, how each of the family member, displays love or shows love can be different. That's okay. That's where I need to remind them of their individualism. Even though we are a family, we can still have our own personalities, our own way of loving. That's okay. With boundaries, that's another thing too.
There's no boundaries in an Asian house.
No, there's no way. And it's almost like if you have boundaries or if you're your own individual person, then you're selfish.
It's like, you don't love me anymore. Yeah. It becomes manipulative. And I'm like, what the heck? I'm just trying to take care of myself.
Yeah. So it's like finding that balance of, like, it's okay to, because it's not that black and white when it comes to things like love and values, any values. It's not that black and white. Like, as long as each family member still holds that value, I think that way we can work together as a family. But we can definitely go, like, again, like, deeper and
discuss
more. Yeah, but I think just that that piece is like finding that value and then working together. It doesn't matter how you get to that value, as long as you get to it. So helping them to explore that as a counselor. So I hope that answered your question.
That's what we're seeing in the education, is like they're not taking care of things at home, so they're bringing it to school. And I don't have the same freedom to fix things at school that you could do at home.
So really just reminding them, like, hey, what do you value as a family? Let's work on that. So, but thank you so much, Tiffany, for coming here. I don't know if it's too early for us to get boba.
Oh no.
But
it's okay, we'll just, you know, wait it out.
I know. But I'm excited to hear the final product. I'll make sure to send it over to you.
So now I have to hear myself talk
again. Oh no. Do you hate that?
Do. But like, I guess COVID made it a little easier because we did so many recordings anyways. So I was like, you know what, I'm just gonna scrub really fast and then done.
Maybe I should put some sound effects, like make our voice deeper, high pitch.
My laugh is gonna come out.
That's true. By the way, if you guys don't know this, Tiffany is known for her laugh.
Gosh, literally, they found me, her and her husband found me at a random restaurant,
I think it was a ramen store.
Ramen store, and they're like, I think that's Tiffany's laugh. We walk over to dessert unplanned and they're like, it was her.
We found the culprit. But yeah, thank you.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
I'll probably have you again soon. Because I'm going to replace my brother.
Yeah, of course. Bye.
Thank you.
Yeah.